I'm shattered, very disappointed. Why am I so disappointed? Well, I would have wished that the vote would have been Remain, because I am committed to the values that are articulated in the European Union. And this is where I think the great disappointment is to be felt. Why are people pulling back from togetherness, from cooperation? It's never easy. It's never a thing that can be easily done. It has to be worked at. And the institutions we put in place, they become ambivalent and ambiguous. People use them to just pursue their own career, their own power, and so on. But they have a purpose and a function, and without them, we really are in jeopardy. Let me just point out a few of the things that really disappoint me. I mean, the Northern Ireland situation. Northern Ireland has voted in favour of Remain. Again, a very small margin in favour of Remain. But this indicates that that area of the United Kingdom is out of sync with the whole of the United Kingdom. Again, the Scottish situation is going to be interesting, as we know. Will Scotland push for a breakup of the United Kingdom? There is a real shattering of union, not just in European Union, but in United Kingdom. Why is union so important? We're more and more in a world of interdependence. We affect each other. We make an impact on each other. It's not just in the economy, it's in our thought, it's in the styles of life that we cultivate and facilitate. This impacts, as we know, on each other. So we have to work together to manage that. And it's often conflicted. Politics is based on the commitment to manage our conflict without resorting to violence, to force, to the domination by the powerful of the weaker. Now that's the vision and the inspiration that was behind the European Union. And I think it's also been the vision and the inspiration behind the Belfast Agreement and the realization that people have had. We are in conflict. We've got different visions of how we want to live our lives. But how do we manage that conflict? It has to be by talking, by negotiating, by working together, fighting it out, but with words, not with weapons. Now, that's where I am disappointed by what has happened.
Is there a way in which the EU itself, though, has to bear a responsibility, perhaps? Because you mention about the founding vision of the founding fathers and without weapons, following on from the horrors of World War II. Mm-hmm. And yet, it has become, in terms of the EU, a sort of a fortress Europe, increasingly militarised, and with an economic policy that has created some of the conditions that I would think maybe some of the people who voted were suffering under, namely bad housing, unemployment, and not getting their fair share of the cake. And then feeling that the migrants who were coming in were in competition with them and that were taking what little of the pie they had left.
Yes, all of those points are relevant. But I think there's been a big lie behind this. I mean, one of the reasons why the European Union has been, a failure in some respects, or has been weak, is because the United Kingdom did not participate as a full partner. Had the United Kingdom contributed from its wisdom, not necessarily by buying into the euro, but from its wisdom of running its own currency, for instance, and having a successful worldwide currency that has survived despite the political weakening of the United Kingdom. Had the United Kingdom contributed out of its experience and wisdom to helping the euro to become a viable currency and providing for the dangers that existed and not having a coordinated political management of the currency, I think we wouldn't have faced the same sorts of crises as we've seen with Greece and the southern European states. What we're seeing, not just in Europe, but also in the United States, is a disintegration of a commitment to politics. This polarization in the United States, where the two main parties, although they know in their hearts that the way the American political system works is that they have to do deals. They have to come together and come to some kind of a compromise, do a deal and work it out. But more and more they are polarizing. And more they're polarizing into the sorts of candidates that we see now campaigning for the presidency of the United States. I think we have failed in the Western democratic world to invest in cultivating the valuing of these fundamental values that are at the heart of the European Union or at the heart of the American democratic system. We haven't strengthened them, rooted them in people's hearts and people's basic fundamental convictions and commitments. And that's what Jefferson said, that if the freedom is not rooted in the personal characters and commitments of individual Americans, it will not survive. Now, I think that has been the failure in the European Union as well. We did have the founding generation who articulated well what it was all about. But more and more it has not been fostered by the political elites, by the political culture, helping people to understand how important this is and why it is so important.
Why do you think the people did vote that way? Do you accept, as is generally said, that it was about migrants, it was about immigrants and stopping the flow, and it was also about people, as you say, disaffected at the bottom, as in America, from a sense of politics that meant anything to them. And so it was a reaction to that as well.
Yes, I think though there's been a demonizing of migrants. The responsibility for the cutback in social welfare, the austerity programs that have really bitten into people's well-being and livelihoods, the responsibility for that is with the British government, isn't it? And the policies they have pursued. Now, they might well have been the right policies. That's not the point I'm making here. But it is not the fault of the migrants, and it's not the fault of the European Union that that is the case. The British government has had its opportunities, which it has exercised in one particular way. And it has been a great convenience for them always to be able to blame others. In fact, migration in the United Kingdom is of benefit to the United Kingdom. As people have said, countering all of this demonizing that has gone on in the campaigning, in hospitals, in A&D departments, the migrants are people offering the service. They're not the people queuing up. Now, obviously, there are localities, and this is undeniable, there are localities where, and this is true in Ireland as well, we know, where schools have a very difficult challenge because many migrant families are concentrated in one particular area, which means teachers are having to deal with a class where maybe 5-10% of the children have English as their mother tongue. And that is a real challenge. You know, there are questions that have to be addressed. But I think the tragedy has been that the cutbacks and austerity have bitten into the provision of resources that would be needed to address those questions.
Final word then. I know you've been at this conference here in Ireland, 3 days on church, the role of church in state, good riddance, good influence. And indeed, some of the issues and questions that have come up tangentially relate to that, how to cope with pluralism, how to deal with difference, how to work as a unity. Any hope you're taking away from...
No, it's been a wonderful conference. I've loads of hope. And a couple of hundred people over 3 days listening to fantastic presentations from a wide range of disciplines from different parts of the world as well. Just the willingness of people to engage in reflection, in discussion of the kinds of questions that arise for us, how to be church in a pluralist society. The commitment to thinking it out is so impressive. It gives me loads of hope. And the hunger that people have for this kind of engagement is extraordinary. And there's no doubt about it, that hunger is there. So I think the Loyola Institute and other bodies like ourselves in London who are involved in education, especially in theological education, we must do more to give people access to these kinds of conversations, because the same thing applies to the questions for the church as apply to the European Union. If we don't use it, we will lose it. If we don't articulate and practice the ideals, the values we espouse and try and make sense of them, they will evaporate. We'll still have the words, liberty, equality, justice. We'll have the words, but they won't mean very much. And Cardinal Marx was really very impressive on that. Also giving great hope, and it's great because also he's one of the advisors that Pope Francis has drawn together to help him reform the church. But Cardinal Marx had this great line that the gospel is an enlightenment document. It is a commitment to freedom, to liberation from what oppresses humanity. So there is the admission on the cardinal's part that freedom, liberty, which is at the heart of the gospel message, is not always realized in the church, and that needs to be addressed made articulate, and then worked on. And so there's great hope there. When somebody at that level is not being defensive, a question he was asked in the group yesterday, you know, what about the church itself? It's got all of these problems. And they were listed, and the cardinal's response was,
I agree.
I agree.